pull up if you're with the shits.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me as always on Twitter at redrock_beeble. If you're new to the podcast, we're going to go through and do what we do in every show, and that is recap all the action from the day's games. Today's case, we're looking at the 9 games from Wednesday. We're going to preview the 4-game Thursday slate for DFS, and we're going to shine that player spotlight. We're going to head back to Utah. We've been there a couple of times on the player spotlight, and we're going to look at Jay Crowder of the Utah Jazz in the player spotlight. It's all to come in this edition of the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast. So, Michael Bolton,
let's get to it.
Yes, let's get to it indeed. We will start with the monstrous line of the night. It didn't take him very long to get there. Kyrie Irving only played under 25 minutes, but had 34 points, 4 triples, 4 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, and just stellar efficiency, 13 of 18 from the field and 4 of 4 from the line. Across the last 4 games, he is the 4th-ranked fantasy player because he is scoring 27 a game and doing it on 58% shooting, and that is one of the large strengths of Kyrie Irving. Is the super efficient shooting. Now, there was some concern, moving away from LeBron, becoming more of the man, would he see a dip in efficiency? Well, it's been the exact opposite. His true shooting has gone from 58% to 61%, and his usage has increased as well. Not by much, but 0.4%, which I guess is to be expected without LeBron. But that increase in efficiency is fantastic. A 41% three-point shooter, 49% from the field, goes 89% from the line. He's averaging 25, 4, and 5 with over a steal and almost 3 triples per game. If he could get himself to 1.8 steals per game, which is not really his thing, but if he ever got to that, then we're talking about a top 10, top 8 sort of a fantasy guy, but just not there at the moment. His minutes have been down, actually, over the last month, only 30 minutes a game. Contrast that to the 35 per game he played last season, but still, he is the 14th ranked player over the last 2 weeks because that efficiency has been so excellent from Kyrie Irving, doing so much for this Celtics team, and looks like he's just going to be a staple second round guy for the next 3-4 years at least. He's still not even 26 years of age. Not far off that, but we've still got 3 or 4 years of Kyrie prime left where he is going to be this second round fantasy value guy. Well, that's what I believe. Anyway, the waiver wire line of the night. No people ask for this. Yes, The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, 15-9, which on the surface, I guess, doesn't look all that sexy. He just missed the Gooch, which is the 3-3-3. He had 3 triples. He had 3 steals, and they took one away. So ended with 3 triples, 2 steals, and 4 blocks. That is an excellent contribution right across the box. Or had an assist and was 6 of 8 from the field. We had that game a couple of games ago where he only played 11 minutes all in the first half, and the drop Dwayne Dedman tweets were coming out. And I said, look, I don't know what they're going to do. I wasn't sure at that time of what the reasoning was behind why he was benched. And we always get worried about these teams. Are they going to start bringing other guys in? But it's not like the Hawks had this other real young gun center prospect. Yes, there is John Collins, but he is the starting power forward, and you could move Collins to center. They don't have a young gun power forward to slip into that role necessarily. So, Dedman's in a very similar situation to the other guys at that position. Miles Plumlee's trash. Yeah, Mike Muscala's on that second year option contract, the same as Dedman, and he's not as good. So, you feel relatively good about Dedman. He played 25 in the last game. He's played, in fact, over 25 minutes in 5 of the last 6 games. He's had 2 double-doubles in that time and just narrowly missing one in this game, as we just touched on. His numbers are obviously impressive so far this season. He's inside the top 100, and that's only in 23 minutes per game. And you say, Josh, 10-7 is not impressive, but it's because he's a 56% field goal, 77 from the line. He's giving you a 3 a game. He's just contributing in multiple areas without really hurting you in many spots. and he does have the ability to continue to be a top 100 player for the rest of the season. And I think that's what we'll get from Dwayne Dedman. So if he's on your wire, while I wouldn't say it's necessarily a must-own, got to grab him, because some of your teams are going to be really strong as you're pushing towards the playoffs. So maybe he isn't better than your worst guy, but in a lot of cases, he will be. So go and have a look if he is on your wire and make that decision as to whether he is going to fit on your team or not. The young gun of the night, Jakob Poeltl of the Toronto Raptors, 13-8 for Poeltl, 5 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks, 5 of 7 from the field and 3 of 3 from the line. He has been excellent lately. In fact, over the last month, he is a top 75 player, and that would stun many people. It stunned me when I looked at it. But what's the reason? Why is he at that sort of level? Well, he's only playing 21 minutes a game, but there are two reasons why his value is ranked as highly as it is over the last month. Number one, he's blocking 1.9 shots per game. Obviously a really high number and well above what his season average is 1.3. That's great as a streaming value. Can you go and add that in? Yeah, sure, that can be useful. He has not had a game where he didn't block a shot since the 1st of February, so every other game in February he's blocked at least one shot. The other thing that's keeping his ranking as elevated as it is over those last 12 games, he's shooting 72% from the field. Now, that's obviously an amount that's probably unsustainable. Not by much, though, because he is a 65% guy over the course of the entire season, just a little bit of a boost. And the other thing that's really helping that ranking number is the fact that he's a 59% shooter from the line for the season, but in those last 12 games, he's at 93%. So unless he's just corrected his free throws during the season, which is not a crazy thing. We saw Hassan Whiteside do that a couple of seasons ago. I don't believe he's corrected it to become a 93% three-point shooter. In fact, if we look at the totals over that time, he's 13 of 14 from the line, so it's an extremely small sample size. But if he can keep himself as a 70-72% free throw shooter, that really helps him. I spoke about Poeltl quite a few times on this show, maybe a couple of weeks ago, a month ago or so, talking about what I think about him long term. I think that he has a significant chance to be the starting center for the Raptors next season, and I do think that he is going to be a top 100 player, probably a top 80 guy next year. All his advanced metrics point to a guy being a real, real solid to good starting center, maybe even higher. You know, a really sensational box score plus minus stuff for a second year guy, a relatively young guy as well, putting up some good numbers. And if he can maintain a high field goal percentage, high free throw percentage, or at least moderate free throw percentage with a high block rate, that's why Dwayne Dedman's numbers are as high as they are. And Poeltl's doing that. He's averaging 9 rebounds per 36 minutes, 14 points in 2.5 blocks and over 3 blocks over the last month per 36. Those are values that really should get you interested. He's never going to be a 20 point per game scorer. He's not going to be this guy who's you know, shooting threes or anything like that, but he's adding other things. You know, the assist numbers are up. He's getting some steals. And if you can be a big man, you see it with Andre Drummond, DeMarcus Cousins, you can get 1.5 steals as a center, add that to 1.5 to 2 blocks per game. And then if he starts dishing, which he's doing at the moment, there's a real ton of potential here with Poeltl. And while I don't think that he's necessarily a must-grab guy, well, I don't think he's a must-grab guy in 12-team leagues, again, it is really, look, he could be, he could be a must-grab guy. If you want blocks with field goal percentage, then sure, he's going to deliver that. But he's not going to give you threes. He's not going to score. He's not going to do enough in those other areas. But it's a really specific add. And if you need that, then absolutely fine to do it. But I do think that the field goal percentage and block rate is a little bit elevated at the moment, and it will probably drop back down over the coming months. But if the Raptors continue to blow out teams, then there is a chance that he gets more minutes. Now, if we look at their upcoming schedule, they've got the Wizards, probably not a blowout. The Hornets, they'll be trying hard. The Hawks, sure. The Pistons, probably. The Rockets, yeah, probably not. And the Knicks, that's their next 6 games. So there's probably 3 games where he could push to 24 minutes and probably 3 others where he plays maybe 20 minutes. But that still can have value. So it's about looking at your team. It's about looking, do I need these numbers? Do I need this high field goal percentage boost on not huge attempts, but not insignificant attempts, especially at that level of percentage where it could be valuable for you? But those blocks are really the crown jewel in what Poeltl's fantasy value is. But do like him a lot long term. I just wouldn't be labeling him a must-own guy just at this point, and he won't be replacing Jonas Valanciunas this season, in my opinion anyway. Tell a man's not hot. I have joked about naming the Dud of the Night, the Jaylen Brown Dud of the Night award. I think it's probably got to be the Marcin Gortat Dud of the Night award, because he gets it again, 2-3-3. And the only reason he keeps qualifying is because his ownership percentage still sits above 70. Now, in probably majority of leagues that matter, he's been dropped, but 77% ownership is just bananas. It is way, way too high. He is outside the top 160 for the season, barely inside the top 200 over the last 2 months. The minutes aren't going up. The production's not going up. If for any reason you are still holding on to Marcin Gortat in 12-team leagues, and honestly, 14-team leagues, and to be even further, I would much rather have Jakob Poeltl than Marcin Gortat, not even a contest. Even in 16-team leagues, I reckon you have to make that decision. Shit, do I still hold on to Gortat? Because it has been a very, very bloody lean run, and this is the sort of thing that I did think that was going to happen at the start of the season, one of the predictions that I did get right heading into the year. And you can move on from him fairly comfortably in nearly all leagues, I believe. Let's get into these games now and break them down. There were 9 games across the day on Wednesday. So let's get into those. The first one of these. Now, yesterday I said that this line was ludicrous, that the Pistons were favored by 3. They'd been getting pumped. And I said, oh, I'd love this for the Bucks. The Bucks turned up. Well, actually, no, the Bucks didn't turn up. They were absolutely atrocious. They got smashed by 23. Yanni was really poor, 11-3-2 before going to the locker room with an eye issue. He says he's fine to go, so that's good. Tone Snell was out. Dally was still out. So we had Sterling Brown start. He didn't do much. And I am a decent Sterling Brown fan, but he looked lost in this game. 4-5 in 26 minutes for Sterlo. Nothing to see there for his season value. Johnny Henson, the Muppet, 25 minutes, 6-4 with 2 blocks. Still the 3 centers, but again, Tyler Zeller was closing this game out in garbage time. 11 minutes for Zeller, and Thon McCurr played 10. Henson still just clinging on to 12-team league value, but it's far from a cut-and-dried situation where he was, I believe, must-own for nearly all of this season. The reintroduction of 3 centers into the mix is dropping his value down, and I don't think that he is a must-own player anymore. That is John Henson. Bledsoe had 19-6-4. Chrissy Middleton was inefficient. 10 from 10 from the line's good, but 3 of 10 from the field isn't. 17 points with 2 steals, while we got a 26-minute Sean Sexy Boy Kilpatrick cameo. Once Snally's back, once Dally's back, once Brogo's back, you're not going to be seeing any Sexy Boy at all. Jabari Parker played in a back-to-back. I'm a little bit stunned at that. Didn't play well. 18 minutes, 7 points. So after it was turning the corner, this was a shit show from him, but I'm not too concerned. First game in a back-to-back, he should be fine. Go back to 25, 26 minutes in the next game and be able to produce. The Pistons changed up the starting lineup. Jim Ennis moved into the starting lineup ahead of Stan Johnson, but the minutes distribution stayed the same. Ennis played 15 minutes and had 4 points, while Stan played 30 and was fantastic. I know that I could almost hear the arousal of Kyle McEwen's trouser region from across the what ocean separates us? From across the Pacific Ocean. He was that excited watching Stanley Johnson. 19-6-4 in 30 minutes for Stan. He was doing everything defensively, offensively. I don't think we should be looking at this going, well, this is just what Stan's going to do from now on. He's shown flashes, but then he goes back and does very little. And again, at 35 minutes, I liked him in 12-teamers. If he's playing 28-29, yeah, not so much. I'd leave him for the deeper leagues. Andre Drummond continues to crank it out, 15-16 with 2 steals, while Blake Griffin cranks it out in the opposite direction, 3 of 10 from the field. Another inefficient night. Only 8 points for Griffo, 9 rebounds and 7 assists. He only played 25 minutes as this game was over pretty quickly. So we're looking at the rotations. Yeah, Van Gundy said he wanted to make that decision between Luke Kennard and Langston Galloway before the last game and stick with it for a while. So Kennard played in the last game. So, of course, that meant that Kennard would continue in that role moving forward. I'm just kidding. He only played 4 minutes and Langston Galloway was ahead of him and played 23 minutes. So the backup shooting guard musical chairs bullshit continued. So thank you once again, Stan Van Gundy, for the brilliant coaching misdirection that obviously won you this game. Well done. Reggie Bullock had 16 points with 3 assists and 2 triples there. Another solid night. He's a totally fine standard league guy with very little upside. Dwighty Bikes, 24 minutes, 12-4 with 4 steals, while Jameer Nelson not in the rotation again, thankfully. So Bikes has got, for the time being, that backup point guard role. It was also a big game from Eric Morland, who went 10-12-6, also missed all 3 of his free throws. Van Gundy did say he was going to be giving Morland more minutes in this run where the Pistons games are really squished in together, and in this sort of a blowout, it was the perfect opportunity. So don't be looking at that and expecting that to be a baseline sort of performance from Eric Morland. the Raptors and the Magic. We've talked about Poeltl already, but his bench unit front court mate, Pascal Siakam, was awesome as well. 14-6-4 for Siakam. 2 steals and a block on 7 of 9 shooting. Missed his 3, which is basically what he does, but he has improved his 3-point shooting lately. I love what we've seen from Siakam, but I would have him significantly below Poeltl for this season in fantasy and in dynasty numbers. Again, this game was one of those situations where they could rest a lot of their guys, but we still got 34 minutes of DeRozan and 33 for Lowry. Siakam's a guy that I really like watching play. Apart from the poor 3-point shooting, he is super energetic, bouncy, you know, plays hard, puts his ass into everything. Really, really, you know, fun guy to watch and provides a big spark for this team. The 4 assists are a little bit out of the ordinary for him here, but he has shown that in a couple of years, he could very comfortably take over this starting power forward job from Serge Ibaka. Maybe even as early as next season, we will see. But he has, you know, stepped himself up, and I think that he will become standard league relevant in a couple of years. Lowry had 17-7-11, while DeRozan had 21-3-4, while Freddie VanVleet, another strong game from VanVleet, 3 assists, 2 steals, and 3 triples in 27 bench minutes, and he is in the closing lineup at this stage because the Jedi, OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
Oh, no!
He hurt his ankle, only played the 10 minutes, so VanVleet got those closing minutes. Norm Powell was atrocious. I used to like Norm Powell. I still think he can be okay, but he has been absolutely terrible this season. Just really, really poor performances all round. Valanciunas, only the 20 minutes in this one, did have some foul trouble. 10-5, still good. Still need to hold on to him. On to the Magic. Aaron Gordon did play 31 minutes, 11-10 with 2 steals and a block. But Mario Hezonja, the numbers look great. If you just look at the box, we go, shit, 17 points, that's awesome. 3 triples, 2 steals, yes, let's go make sure we're re-owning Mario Hezonja. But remember, he only played 19 minutes and then he shot 71% from the field. So in order to put up a line as big as that, he needed to shoot at a level that's completely unsustainable. I like Hezonja, I love what he's done this season, but if he's going to be playing under 20 minutes, which has been 2 consecutive games, it is hard to rationalize owning him in 12-team leagues despite this performance. On the flip side, DJ Augustin, 2 big games in a row, 11-4-6 with 3 triples. You need a point guard. There are many, many other worse guys out there than DJ. Evan Fournier had 17-2-4. Yeah, not a lot happening there. Vucevic struggled, as did John Simmons with his free throws, especially 2 of 4 from the line for Simo. 13-4-3 after that big game in the last one. It's just what he does, man. That is just what John Simmons does. The Charlotte Hornets and the Boston Celtics, this was an annihilation. No Cody Zeller, no Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, so Trevion Graham started. He had 2 points in 30 minutes, so that was awesome. Jez Lamb came off the bench, only 25 minutes for Lammy, 10 points with 2 triples and a block. I'm not sure whether he will start the next game if Kidd-Gilchrist is out. We just don't know at this point. If you did add him, I would still hold him because the Trevion Graham starting experience didn't really go all that well in this game. Kemba had 23, Batum had 7, 5, and 10, and Dwight had 21 and 3. So solid games from their big names there, but none of them had to play big minutes because the game was out of control as early as it was. Malik Monk continues to be one of the worst rookies in the NBA, 19 minutes for 3 points. And in a game that was a blowout where Dwight Howard played 26 minutes, in a game where Cody Zeller was out with a knee injury, Bill Hernangómez played 9 minutes. Now, he had 6 rebounds, a good rebounding rate, but missed all 4 free throws and missed all 4 shots from the line. Wasn't great stuff there from Bill at all, and he has fallen off a considerable way. And if you can't even get to like 15, 16 minutes in a game without Zeller and without Kidd-Gilchrist, it's a little bit of a worry for how the Hornets actually view him. This was a perfect opportunity to give him those minutes, and he just couldn't do shit with him, really. For the Celtics, no Vanilla Tyser. Aaron Baines played a larger role. 12-10 for Bainesy in his 22 minutes. I always say this about him. He's one of those guys that when the minutes are elevated, the production comes. It's been all the way back from his Detroit days, back further to his San Antonio days, is when he plays, if he's forced into action with Drummond sits or Tim Duncan sits and he plays 28 minutes, you will get a double-double and you will get a couple of blocks and you will have fantasy relevance. And that's what happened here. Not that Daniel Tice is Andre Drummond or Tim Duncan, but it enabled him to play those extra minutes. Greg Monroe also back into the rotation. He had 14-4 in 21, again benefiting from Tice's absence. Jason Tatum, man, 7 points in 21 minutes. I talked about him a couple of days ago. I don't know. I don't think that he has to be held. It all depends on how your team looks, on who you'd be adding off the waiver wire, but he has struggled for an extended period of time. He only played 21 minutes in this one. your blowout included, but his minutes have been down, so it's not looking great. Al Horford, 5-2-4. Someone did ask me if Al Horford is droppable. That's a strong, strong no from me, but he hasn't been good the last couple of games either. Well, Jaylen Brown was good. 7-7 from the line. His big deficit is from the free throw line. 15-5-4, but don't count on that level of production, I wouldn't think, as we move forward. The Indiana Pacers and the Atlanta Hawks. The Pacers are going to be signing Trevor Booker. That would take TJ Leaf out of the rotation. Not that he's even been in the rotation recently. But it's also going to reduce the minutes, I think, for the little dog, Glenn Robinson III. He was getting minutes at the three, pushing Bojan Bogdanović up to the four. And if Booker comes in and plays that backup role at the four, then it is going to impact what maybe Bojan can do and what Robinson could do. Bogdanović was great. He had 26 with 5 triples in 35 minutes, but as usual, very little else. Really high usage and did it efficiently, but those two things don't normally go in concert when we're talking about Bojan Bogdanović. So an excellent points and three streamer. That's about it. Oladipo, 22-5-5 with 6 steals and a block. The efficiency was in the shitter completely, but you love those other peripheral numbers. While Thaddeus really filled it up as well. 11-5-3 with 3 steals and 2 blocks. Also a good Lance Stevenson game. Don't count on that. While Miles Turner was terrible, he got himself into foul trouble, only played 16 minutes. So that meant that we got a big game from Domantas Sabonis. 34 minutes for Domantas, 14-12 with 3 assists. But again, if everything's working as it should, then he is going to be almost exclusively playing backup center minutes, especially when Booker arrives for this team. Corey Joseph, 0 points in 31 minutes. This is why he wasn't a guy to scoop in the absence of Darren Collison. For the Hawks, the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince, he should be the player that was formerly on your waiver wire. Go and add him. He has been strong lately. 35 minutes, 15-7, 3 threes, 2 steals, 1 block. This is the sort of fantasy production we thought he could have all season. He's gone through big slumps. I'm not the biggest fan of him on court, but the production's coming at the moment. Kent Bazemore's really struggling. 6 points with 5 assists and 2 steals, and I'm not a big Bays fan. Dennis Schroeder had 14-3-5 with 5 steals. Wasn't efficient, but the minutes were back up, so that's a positive sign. While the Baptist only played the 27, foul trouble again. But 16-7 with 2 blocks is exactly why I've been touting or blowing his horn.
Giggity!
Bit slow there, Quagmire. Blowing his horn all season. Really like what we're seeing for Isaiah Taylor. He is one of the best shot-blocking point guards in the NBA, and that is a weird thing to say for a bloke called Isaiah Taylor that many people, casual fans, would never have heard of. But he gets blocks so often in limited minutes. Now, with Malcolm Delaney back, he only played 16, but still had 13 points, 2 assists, and a triple one. And in mid-size leagues, 16 teamers, I think Taylor's going to have value for the rest of the year. They really like what he's doing. Look, don't be surprised if he plays 20 minutes. Don't be surprised if he moves out of the rotation. Such is the way the Hawks run things. But at the moment, he's on a real strong run. Jalen Morris is a real NBA player. He was signed today and he made his debut, scored 2 points in 12 minutes. So shout out to you, Jalen Morris, for getting in there and playing in an NBA game, which is always a great achievement. Phoenix Suns and the Memphis Grizzlies. Joshy Jackson, Jesus, this was a huge game from him. 40 minutes for Jackson, 29-7, 4 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, and did it very, very efficiently. 56% from the field, 77% from the line. This was excellent. He looked great. He looked in control. And that's not something I've been able to say about him all season. But he has shown some improvements in his free throw shooting. He's been more aggressive rebounding. I still, I copped a bit of shit on Suns Reddit today for saying I don't think that he's going to be a star. I said I'm not convinced he's going to be a star. And I still don't think that way. I think he can be a really solid player, but not necessarily a very good starter. But today was an impressive game. But we have to remember for the month of February, he still had a true shooting of under 50%. And that is really not good. And today was awesome. He looked really good. We'll see what happens when TJ Warren comes back. He did see his minutes sort of start to come down when Warren had get his minutes back up. How they run things is going to be really interesting now. Does Jackson remain in the starting lineup? Does Warren come back in? Interesting to see what Triano does. But if you want to take a flyer on a guy and you're not too worried about percentages, Jackson is a valuable guy to look at because he can fill up the numbers. He does take a ton of shots, probably too many, but he takes a ton of them. He's rebounding the ball and he can get those defensive numbers. But In saying all of that, it's not like those defensive numbers have been a huge thing for him all season. He hasn't been getting your two steals and two blocks regularly. Of course not, because no one really gets those numbers regularly, but he is averaging only half a block per game for the season in his 24 minutes. To be fair to him, over the last 13 games, he's upped it to over one a game. So it has improved, and he's improved his effort. He's improved his efficiency over that time as well. So they're all good, positive things for Josh Jackson and the Suns. Devin Booker was great, 34 and 6. But how about Shaq Harrison? He's jumped ahead of Tyler Ulis. He played 18 minutes. He had 7 and 5 and had 4 steals. That's the second time in his NBA career, as short as it is, that he's had 4 steals of the game. And I talked about someone not knowing who Jalen Morris is. No one's going to know who Shaq Harrison is, really. And that is an interesting steal stream. If he's playing 12 to 13 minutes a night, you can get 1 to 2 steals out of him. That's the sort of thing you've got to look at in your fantasy playoffs. Marquise Chris, man, I don't want to write blokes off in their second season in the NBA, but he's just terrible. It's as simple as that. He's still young. He played 7 minutes. In fact, he played 6 minutes 38 and had 5 fouls. He looks lost out there. He can fill up the fantasy stat sheet. We've said this all the time, but I have continually said that he's the big man Tony Roten. He's just not a good player who can put up stats. You shouldn't be owning him in any 12, 14 team leagues or anything like that. But there, he's still got time to grow. He's still got time to turn it around. Alex Len, 6-11 with 4 assists. Yeah, that's an okay game with Tyson Chandler out, while Dragan Bender had 7-5, 2 blocks and a 3. I'm not sure he'll ever become an excellent fantasy guy. I like what he does on the court. I'm a big fan of his on-court play, but I don't ever think he'll become an excellent fantasy guy. Lord Alfred had 19, 10, and 4 as well. On to the Grizzlies, Marc Gasol owners should be feeling pretty good here. 35 minutes, 22 and 13, a steal and 4 blocks. There will be some rest days in back-to-backs. I think they might only have one more back-to-back for the season anyway, but you're happy with this production. They were without Wayne Seldon, Chandler Parsons, Tyreek Evans, and Deontay Davis in this game in the Grizzlies. So Andy Harrison, man, one of the best stories, I think, in the NBA this season. He was one of the worst players in the league last year. He had 20 points, 5 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals, a block, and 3 triples, and he is going to settle in very, very nicely as the back up to Mike Conley next season. Obviously, his fantasy value is not going to be the same as what it is at the moment because he is a 12-team league player for now. They went away from the Jarrell Martin, Jermichael Green 3-4 starting combination. They started Ben McLemore. That did not last long. McLemore played 9 minutes and Martin was back in to start the second half, and he played well. Another one of the best stories in the NBA, Jarrell Martin. If you don't know the story, he was literally cut. All the reports out, Jarrell Martin's getting cut. The Grizzlies have got too many guys. And not only did they then, they backed off and went, oh, maybe not, as he worked his way through training camp, made the final roster, and as a regular part of the rotation and playing well. 16-6-5 for Jarrell. We're not looking at him as a 12-team league guy, more a 16-teamer, while Jermichael Green had 12-12 with 2 blocks. If your league counts double-doubles, Green gets a bump. He's not a high scorer, but he can get those low-end double-doubles, 10-10s, 11-11s. The 2 blocks is nice from him also, but again, no Davis, no Parsons, no Seldon, no Evans, and those 4 blokes all come back into the rotation, and that will cut Green's playing time, as him and Martin play the majority of those power forward minutes, maybe 25 minutes apiece instead of 35 minutes apiece. So do remember that. Dylan Brooks, 7-2-3. Remember that first game he had for the season? That used to be the Wade Baldwin, having that monster to begin the year. Now it's the Brooksy. Or maybe it's just the Grizzlies rookie who does that in their first NBA game and then does jack shit for the rest of the year. Speaking of jack shit, Ben McLemore had 5 points in 9 minutes. The Golden State Warriors and the Washington Wizards, Draymond did what he does, 11-6-11 with 2 steals and 2 blocks on 83% shooting. Durant had 32, Curry had 25, and Klay had just the 13. He's been a real disappointment, I believe, for fantasy this season, Klay Thompson. Jordy Bell only 7 minutes. Any fanciful hopes you have of him playing 25 minutes, I don't think they're going to come true this season. While Iguodala had 14-7, a steal and 3 blocks, really good numbers, hit all 6 of his shots from the line, and his shot has started to come around after being absent from the beginning of the year. More just looking at him as an interesting, hey, I need steals and assists on a low volume day. Do I add Iguodala? That's a possibility. But we're not looking at him in any 12-team formats aside from that. On to the Wizards. Otto Porter, really bad to start the year when John Wall was out. In the second stint of Wall's absence, has been fantastic. 29-10 for Porter. He's upping his usage. hit 4 threes, had 2 steals, and that was the problem. Without Wall there, he couldn't create his own shot. He was forced into extra usage and couldn't do shit with it. But recently, he has been flying. He is the 18th ranked player in 8 cat leagues, so not even counting his minuscule turnover rate. 18th in the last week and 22nd over the last month, averaging almost 20 and 7, shooting 53, 90, and 40. They are ludicrous numbers. 1.5 steals, 7 rebounds. He looks fantastic, and again, really shaky to start the season, but 100% crushing it at the moment. Shout out to you, Otto Porter, whose first couple of seasons in the NBA totally derailed by that hip problem and looked like a huge bust. Now he looks like that he is going to be a top 50 real-life NBA guy for the next couple of years with what he can do efficiently shooting. Tomas Satoranski, the minutes were back. 11-5-3 is okay. It's not great, but it's still 12-team useful, while Kelly Oubre had 17-4-3. 25% shooting is not ideal, but the nice production is there. You know, solid 12-team streaming sort of a player. Brad Beal was piss poor, 8-4-5. He'd been great though, so we'll give him a pass there. Talked about Much and Gortat being shit already, while Timmy Frazier went scoreless in 10 minutes. The New Orleans Pelicans, man, every game the Pelicans seem to play appears to be close. They beat the Spurs by 5 on the road. That is an absolutely massive win for this Pelicans team. Tone Davis didn't drop 50, so it looks disappointing, but he still had 26 and 15 with 2 steals, while Rajon Rondo, third consecutive game with over 30 minutes, 13, 8, and 12. I don't think you can leave him on the waiver wire at all anymore, while Drew just dropped 25 on 61% shooting. Nick Mirotic, second game in a row with lower minutes, only 20 minutes here, 13 and 2 with 2 triples. They went with a lot more Etuan Moore, a lot more Darius Miller, because it wasn't Emeka Okafor, who only played 4 minutes in this game and went scoreless. Mirotic did start that second half, but again, the minutes weren't very high. I'm not overly worried about Mirotic, but the trend, it's just the beginning of a trend, so let's see where that goes. Diallo back in the rotation after one game out, 4 points in 12 minutes. I like what Cech can do. In fact, this is showing you what he can do. 12 minutes, 4 points, but a steal and 2 blocks in that time. Just the playing time is never going to be high enough to really have too much of an impact, while Etuan Moore had 17 in 38 minutes. Onto the Spurs, they were without Pau Gasol, obviously no Kawhi, and then LaMarcus Aldridge hurt his ankle. He hurt it early, stayed in the game, and then left and didn't return after halftime. With both Pau and Aldridge out, we had, let's start from the start. Davis Bertans started in place of Pau, and then at halftime, when Aldridge was out, Bertans actually went to the bench. And then we had Joffrey Laverne come in for him, and we had Danny Green come in, pushing Green to the 3, Kyle Anderson to the 4, and then Laverne starting at the 5. Joffrey had 14 and 7 in 19, while Bertans, who'd been out of the rotation, had just 7 points in 17 minutes. If Aldridge has to miss time, which we don't know yet, he's going to have an MRI on Thursday, we will see any severity there. But if he does miss time, I'm not convinced that Bertans is going to be the pickup. Rudy Gay got extra playing time here, 24 minutes for Gay, 19, 5 and 4 with 1 steal and 3 blocks. Great numbers from Gay. And if Aldridge misses time, he would be an interesting 12-team league add. Apart from that, I'm not adding him in any 12-team league. If Gasol and Aldridge are back, he's just not going to get enough playing time, unfortunately. DeJounte Murray needs to be owned. In fact, he even hit a 3 in this one, which is amazing. 18, 9, and 5 with a triple 1. He has looked excellent. I thought this year he could have a breakout with Tone Parker out to begin the season, but he started off shithouse and lost that starting job. Worked hard, came back strong, took the starting job over, not off Mills, but back off Parker, and has been excellent ever since. Looks like he is going to have multiple top 40 fantasy seasons. Great, great drafting by the Spurs, and great effort and work from Murray to get himself into this position and play as well as he has. Kyle Anderson was, average, 4 and 8. I said this all the time. Look, he's got definite 12-team league value, but he's got no upside. He's just not going to get big numbers. He'll just push through at 90, 100 rank sort of numbers continuously. And that's fine at times, but he's got to really fit what you need from him. You know, his nice steals, decent rebounds, can block some shots, can get some assists, but it's never high really value numbers that he puts up, or high volume numbers, more to the point. The Thunder and the Mavericks, this game went to overtime. Westbrook had 30, 11, and 7 with 3 steals. That's great. Paul George had 23, 11, and 6. Also great. Carmelo Anthony, 12 and 6, and nothing else. And Carmelo Anthony, if you're in a 10-team league, move on. In a 12-team league, you have to consider it. He's outside the top 150 over the last 3 months. I project him to not be top 100 from here on out. I think you have to consider moving on from him. It's been just shithouse. He cannot shoot anymore. The shooting is way off. And he could easily turn that around, but he's just doing nothing else in any other areas. Third bananaing. I think you might have to move on from Mallow in a lot of situations. 9-12 for Steve-O Adams. Joshy Huestis started again. That Huestis, Abrines, Ferguson, shooting guard trio is just atrocious. They just offer nothing, and they're really just deep league guys, if at all. Onto the Mavericks, Dwight Powell started again and was excellent, apart from going 1-6 from the line, 21-8 with 3 steals. Powell, like Jakob Poeltl this year, is one of those guys whose advanced numbers in the first couple of years in his career pointed to a guy that had not necessarily star potential, but had bloody good player potential. And you thought, Dwight Powell, really? Like, when are we going to see it? When's it going to appear? Well, we're seeing it now. We are seeing it consistently. He is a balls-to-the-wall effort guy who is a strong rim runner. He can play defense. He hits his shots. He had 21-8 with 3 steals. That is a great number. He should be owned in all leagues. Nerlens Noel is not cutting into his playing time, in my opinion. He's going to take Salah Mejuries. He's going to take Maxi Kleber's. Not Dwight, because he has been awesome. Dirk had 12-5-4. That's solid. He is definitely a borderline guy. While the Pencil had 26-5-5. A good bounce back after a couple of poor performances. And Berea, on the bench still, 26 minutes, 12-2-7. Those 7 assists, they keep providing you standard league value. Dennis Smith, man, the percentage is atrocious. 33% on 18 attempts, but those counting stats, 17-2-6. And if you're punting field goals, and you might have to be doing free throws as well, given how he shoots there, but if you're punting field goals, he needs to be owned. But you need to make hard decisions at this point. If you cannot afford to be borderline in field goal percentage, you might need to drop him. And that might seem hard. How do I drop this guy? He scores 17 points. But again, if you can't afford that field goal loss, you might have to move on. Nerlens Noel, lots of people have been asking about Noel. What are we going to get from him? Well, this is what Noel can do, and we saw him do this in Philadelphia many times. 4 points, 3 rebounds, 1 steal, 1 block. A real fiend for those defensive numbers, but only played 16 minutes. I don't think he's getting minutes over Powell. Maybe he does over Dirk, but I don't really see the Mavs doing that for a guy who I feel like they have been at odds with. They're going to say, Dirk, you're a legend, but can we have this guy who's been an absolute cocknob all season? Can we have him play above you? I just don't see that happening. Yeah, 16, 17 minute night a roll a night is fine. It's just not going to be a 12-team sort of role value type of proposition. The last game of the night, the Rockets and the Clippers. Jim Harden, with one of the more disrespectful things you'll see in a basketball court. Yeah, he stepped back on Wesley Johnson and Johnson fell over. And you see that happen. I don't really think that's necessarily a huge deal. Guys get their feet, whatever, tangled, whatever. But he did that. And if you haven't seen it, you have to go and check it out. Johnson like tripped and went sliding backwards. Harden stepped back. But then Harden stood there, waited, stared down Wesley Johnson laying on the court for a good, I reckon, 2 to 3 seconds, and then nailed the three. It's as ballsy as it gets to have nuts as large as that, not just to do the step back and to shake the guy and to have him fall over, but then to wait and to stare him down and then hit the shot. If you miss the shot, you look like a real tosser. But to do it in that manner is just absolutely hilarious. It is hilarious. And I see that and we all laugh and we go, this is ridiculous. And it just harkens me back. Australian people, or especially Australian football followers, you may remember an incident last season when Lee Montagna, in the waning seconds of a game, had the ball in the goal square and stood there and waited for 3 seconds before kicking a goal. And the football media was up in arms. How could you do it? So disrespectful. That's just terrible. Really poor form. And we've got a bloke in the middle of a game staring down someone and just waiting to shoot it. And we'll love it. If that had happened in Australian sport, people would have been having an absolute nightmare over it. Oh, how could you do it? So disrespectful. But that was one of the more hilarious moments you'll see in the NBA season. Rant over. Clint Capella, 22-14. Great stuff for him coming back from an illness. While Trevor Ariza was solid while being unspectacular. 11 points, 3 triples and 2 steals. And we know what Ariza's strengths are. It's threes and it's steals. That's what he does. Eric Gordon also back from his illness. 22 points with 5 triples in 28 minutes. Jacked up a ton of shots. 14 of them from 3. Yeah, that's awesome, but look at everything else. 0 assists, 2 rebounds, 39% shooting. I would stream him in for threes and that is it. I wouldn't consider him a must-own player. Shockingly, Luke Marmute didn't drop 12 points in a quarter in this game. Onto the Clippers, they did make a change to their starting lineup. Ty Wallace, who's got one day left on his two-way deal, apparently they are not close on a rest-of-season contract, so I don't know if we're going to see Ty Wallace play again this season. CJ Williams returned for his last day of his two-way contract, and I don't know what they're going to do. There's so much up in the air, but they moved Ty Wallace out of the starting lineup. They put Milos Teodosic back in there, and they moved Wes Johnson out of there before he died at the hands of Jim Harden. and they put Williams in there at the starting three. Now, Williams didn't do anything, 6 points in 21 minutes, while Milos was pretty good, 13, 6, and 4. And if you are looking for a point guard, if this rotation sticks, you can add him. Toby Harris bounced back after the poor showing against the Nuggets, 24 and 4. But Montrezl Harrell, the table was excellent. 29 minutes, 22 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal and a block. And he was rewarded with a second half start with Milos Teodosic going to the bench there. Toby Harris moving to the 3. They were down big early and Harrell got them back into it. So you feel there's a little bit of Doc rewarding him. But he's been playing consistently excellently. I don't think that that's necessarily a must-own guy. I'd rather own a guy like a Dwight Powell, for example. But Harrell is putting up some nice numbers at the moment. He's top 100 over the last month, fueled by, again, like Jakob Poeltl, fueled by high field goal percentage and some decent block numbers. I'd prefer Poeltl over Harrell if I'm adding those guys. But really, it got to highlight how impressive he was. Jordan had 4 and 16, not a great night. But Boban Marjanovic, the Nuggets destroyer, 3 minutes, 0 points, 2 rebounds. Came in the second quarter and only played 3 minutes. So the your Boban hype, your Boban, do we add him in 12-team leagues because the Clippers have a good playoff schedule, or do we add him because he put up 18 points? Like this is a more realistic expectation because, again, as I said yesterday, the guys ahead of him are playing well. The Rooster was out again with his hand injury. It's not a pain thing. He apparently can't close his hand at all, can't tie his shoes, can't grab a ball. It's negative. The x-rays were negative, so there's no break there, but he's going to have an MRI, so it looks like he's going to be out for more time. I don't know what it is with him. It's nothing to do with him as a person, but at this point, we just have to say that his body just is struggling to hold up to the rigors of the NBA. I don't think that he's soft. You know that I'm very anti, calling players soft. You know, Gallo's he's a professional athlete. You'd kick everyone's ass here. None of these guys are soft. None of these guys are pussies. But at this point, we just have to say that his body just cannot handle the rigors of the NBA. And that's, again, it's not a character issue with him. It's just that shit happens to him and it's weird. Like, you tear the muscle off your ass bone. Like, what the hell's going on there? You get an elbow in the back of the hand and then it swells up so you can't even move it. He's just got like an overactive immune system or poor healing response or a combination of both of those things. And that is really causing a problem. Now, when he plays, he's got great value. But I fear we're going to be missing a few more games here from the Rooster, unfortunately. Because I do like Danilo Gallinari. Let's go and do the player spotlight now. We're looking at Jay Crowder of the Utah Jazz, formerly of the Dallas Mavericks, Boston Celtics, and Cleveland Cavaliers. Crowder was a guy that people in fantasy loved, and rightfully so, because he had two top 70 finishes the last two seasons in Boston. Prior to that, he wasn't very good. And when he came across to Boston, I was quite skeptical of him maintaining the sort of value that he had. He kept doing it because I don't think this is going to stick. I don't think this guy is very good. And then over 2 years in Boston, I went, you know what? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is just what he can be. He can hit his threes. He's doing it efficiently. He's getting steals. And then this year has been an absolute disaster. His per 36 numbers have dropped, and his minutes have dropped as well, from 32 per game down to 26 per game. His per 36 scoring has gone from 15.5 to 12.5. He's hitting 0.7 less threes per game. He's getting 1.7 less rebounds, 0.7 less assists. His steal rate is down from last season and massively down from 2015-16. His efficiency has gone from a true shooting of 61 last year to 54, below league average. And he's hitting just 32% of his threes. His last season in Boston, he hit 40% of his threes, but his other years, 33, 29, 34, and 32. So maybe, just maybe, that 16-17 three-point shooting season was the outlier for Jay Crowder. Now, he's come across to Utah in that trade from Cleveland, and he's been better. He's scored in double digits in every one of those games, 15, 14, 15, 11, 11, 12. He's got 3 steals across the 6 games he's played. He's hit some decent numbers of threes, but his efficiency has been off. His highest shooting night has only been 46%. He's had some bad free throw nights. He's putting up okay-ish numbers, but definitely nothing where I look at him and go, you know what, he is a must-own 12-team league guy. But on a low-volume night, I think you can look to add Crowder, but he's more of a 14-team league player. But what does this mean for him in the future? He's 28 years of age. He's still on a really, really good contract that goes for another couple of seasons. So what can we expect from Crowder moving forward? Well, I guess a lot of it's going to depend in Utah on what happens with Derek Favors. Is he brought back? Will they run? Will they let him walk and they'll run with a smaller lineup with Crowder next to Rudy Gobert? But again, Jay is not shooting the three ball well at all. In fact, he is a career 34% three-point shooter, and he's only hitting 28% of his shots since he arrived in Utah from deep, and 38% overall, averaging 13 points. But the steal number's still down, that the scoring's still down. What about the differences between his numbers from Cleveland and Utah? Look, it's a big difference in terms of minutes. He played almost 1,400 minutes in Cleveland. He's only played 170 in Utah. But a lot of the numbers, the PER is basically exactly the same. A worse true shooting in Utah. Negative defensive box score plus minus. Negative overall box score plus minus on both of those teams. But the big difference is the team is a positive when he's on the court, as opposed to Cleveland when they were a negative 9.5, which is a huge, huge number. At the age that Crowder is, where he is, I've just completely lost his age. He's 27, going to be turning 28 soon. So we're sort of right in the middle of where he is. Will he ever come back to being a top 70 player? I'd be doubtful of that. So much of that top 70 value was centered around the fact that he was hitting threes at that high rate. Like his last season in Boston, his biggest category were his threes, where he hit them at 40%. The year before in Boston, his biggest category were his steals, where he got 1.7, and that really bumped up his ranking number. So if those two things are going to go away, and both of those seasons look like outliers across his career, then he's just never going to be that player who cracks into that top 100 again. He's maybe got one more chance to do it next season. I think it's a real stretch to expect that. And I don't think I don't think he's a must-own guy now, clearly. And I don't think that he's really going to see huge turnarounds and expect those things to all come back together and play 33 minutes a night. I think that part of Jay Crowder's career may be over, unfortunately, because he seems like a pretty decent bloke. He seems like a ripper bloke, to be honest. It just feels like a lot of the Boston Celtics magic rubbed off on him, and it has not carried its way across to his new team/teams. Let's have a look at the perfect DFS lineup. Starting with FanDuel, Andy Harrison 43.5, Rajon Rondo 42.6, Oladipo 53.5, while Devin Booker had 49.7, Otto Porter 49, Joshie Jackson 52.5, a big game from him, Draymond had 44.7, Dwighty Powell 42.1, and Jakob Poeltl had 44.1 for a total of 421.6, and that cost $60,000. On DraftKings, Kyrie had 50, Andy Harrison 43.25, Otto Porter 51.5, Poeltl had 40, Eric Morland had 35, shout out to you if you had him in your team, Russell Westbrook 59.25, Joshie Jackson 50.75, and Rondo had 44.5 for a total of 374.25, and that cost the full salary cap of $50,000. All right, let's have a look at a small Thursday in the NBA for DFS, just four games on. So let's see what sort of value we can try and extract out of this slate. The first game we're going to look at is the Los Angeles Lakers. They are taking on the Miami Heat. The Heat are favored by 4, and the total is 215.5. Tyler Johnson is questionable with that leg injury that caused him to sit out the rest of the last game, and the Duke, Wayne Ellington, is doubtful with a quad contusion. So with the Duke likely out, that'll give Scooter Magruder some minutes. It'll also give Dwayne Wade some extra playing time there as well. If Tyler Johnson is out, then Wade gets a real significant boost. And I think you give a boost to guys like the Iron Shoulder and a little bit to Joshie Richardson also. At point guard, actually, let's talk about the Lakers here, because Joshie Hart has suffered a fractured hand. He's going to be out, we assume, for 3 to 4 weeks. We don't know at this point what the treatment is going to be and how long he's going to be out, but that takes a guard out of that rotation. The Lakers also waived Corey Brewer today, so they are extraordinarily thin on the wings. There is one small forward on this roster, and he has been playing point guard, and that's Brandon Ingram. So we would hope that we could have pushed KCP up to the 3 and played Josh Hart at the 2, but now Hart's gone. So that's going to mean, I believe, an increase in minutes for Isaiah Thomas now. Yeah, Lonzo Ball's going to get what he gets. He was going to ramp his minutes up to 30 in this game, and he's going to play his 34 regardless once he's fully healthy. But I think this gives some extra minutes now to Isaiah Thomas, because you have to be able to play, or you won't be able to play Brandon Ingram as a point guard quite as often, unless you're going to go with the future MVP Kyle Kuzma at the three, because there's just literally no wings on this team at all. There's no one. You're losing Harden and waving Brewer at the same time is a devastate blow for this depth on the wings there, but it can help us here in fantasy. So I start off by saying that because Isaiah Thomas is at 5,400. He has not been very good. We know that, but he is still averaging 25 points in his last three games with LA. And at 5,400, all you need is an extra 3 to 4 minutes on top of that. Now, because that's a point per minute he's been going at. You give him 3 to 4 extra minutes, which is not a crazy thing with the absence of Hart and Lonzo still being restricted, and play Lonzo and Isaiah together. Yeah, he can easily get 30 here. So I do like Isaiah Thomas here just because of those scenarios. The Iron Shoulders at 6,700. Hopefully he gets to play against Isaiah Thomas some, because that'll really give him a boost. I like Goran Dragic in this matchup quite a bit. Tyler Johnson, I won't be using him just because of the uncertainty. While Lonzo's at 6,600. In on that, he had 36 in that last game in only 24 minutes. He has clearly got 50-point upside here, and you'd say almost a 30-point floor, which is pretty bloody good at that price. At shooting guard, Wadey is at 4,600. Obviously had a monster in that last game, Dwayne Wade. 40 points in that one. Defense is not going to be too much of a concern against the shooting guards of the Lakers. At 4,600, I like the upside of Wade. I don't think he'll be quite as good as last game, but you could even sneak him into cash, and I don't think it will be wrong. And I do like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Now, saying Kentavious Caldwell-Pope can be a cash option is always fraught with danger, but he has been playing well. His lowest score in his last five has been 29, and that's what I call a really bloody solid floor. The minutes are going to be as many as he can handle, unless they're going to be running Tyler Ennis and Gary Payton the second, the mitten minutes. Then we're going to get a lot of KCP, and I think that's a good situation for him. At small forward, Justice Winslow's at 3,900. You can leave him alone, but Joshy Richardson at 6,100 becomes interesting. I'm not really sure he's got significant tournament upside. I think he's not bad for cash to get you around that 32 mark, but I don't think he's one of the better options on the board. While Brando Ingram, 7,400. We don't know if he'll continue to start at point guard. I would guess with Hart's injury, they'll push Ball in there to get Ingram across to the three. He's been crushing it, Brando, at 7,400. I don't hate it at all. The thing that would give me pause is the matchup. The Heat have been quite good defensively against point guards and against wings, because Josh Richardson's an absolute animal defensively. So that gives me a level of pause with Ingram there. At power forward, Kelly Olynyk's at 4,500. I think he's a GPP guy in a good matchup for him. Not really feeling confident in cash. Well, Jim Johnson, I want nothing to do with. He can probably come out and drop 50 now, but I don't think that's interesting for him. While the future MVP, Kyle Kuzma's at 5,500. Negative matchup. Lower performances from him of late. Not all that keen. Adebayo, we can leave alone also. At center, Hassan Whiteside, 7,700. Really cranking it out at the moment, averaging 42 over his last three. And his last three against the Lakers have yielded 49 points per contest. At 7,700, if I get 40, I'm really happy. And I think that's a significant chance here. If it's a Zubats and Brooke Lopez, I don't really see much there for them. Or Julius Randle, who's been playing well, his salary at 7,700. I would take Whiteside at 77 over Randle, but Randle's still an okay option. But centers in general have struggled against the Heat and Randle in the past. He's been okay, averaging 37 against them. So he's worth a look, but at that same price, same matchup, in the same game, I would take Whiteside over Randle. On DraftKings, there's quite a few guys that I like here again. Whiteside at 8,000, a little bit higher, but still works in with the double-double bonus. KCP at 62 for all those reasons I mentioned already. Joshy Richardson and Isaiah Thomas, really interesting tournament guys. And I think even Thomas at 5,100, you'd have to really consider that for cash, just given those injuries. Lonzo's at 6,400, definitely have some use there. And Ingram at 6,900 is also worth a squeeze. I think the Iron Shoulder, Goran Dragic at 7,400 might be just a little bit too highly priced, unfortunately, for him. The Philadelphia 76ers and the Cleveland Cavaliers are up next. The Cavs are favored by 3.5. The total is the biggest of the day. It's 223.
My name is Jeff.
Jeff Green is questionable. He missed the last game with back soreness. While Ersan Ilyasova, we don't know if he is going to be ready to make his debut for the Sixers. Rashawn Holmes had been filling in at power forward. So if Ilyasova doesn't play, then Holmes is going to get some minutes. Probably not going to exceed 20. So unlikely to be too much of a DFS factor. At point guard, Timothy John McConnell, 3,900. Yeah, McConnell at 3,900, you could look at it and go, well, I think you'll get me 20. And I don't think that's an incorrect statement. I just think the upside's pretty low. Plus, he could also shit the bed. So not going to be one of my highest guys that I look at. Georgie Hill, I don't know what do we get? In the last five games, he's had a 45-pointer and a 9-pointer. So I don't really know what George Hill is going to show up. But at 5,100, really tough to leave him out of the tournament pools. At shooting guard, Rocket Rodney Hood's at 44. No interest there. Kyle Korver, Marco Bellinelli. They're all three-point specialist guys who can heat up. I would take Korver because I save $300 over Bellinelli. And of course, it's only for tournaments. Well, Jordy Clarkson's at 47. Yeah, look, he's not bad there, but I don't really feel too much for him. JJ Redick and the plumber JR Smith, more three-point specialist shooting guards who I don't really feel are worth their salaries. At small forward, Bob Cover's at 5,200 because he has not been playing well. This matchup looks on paper to be a real positive one for him, but he can't get anything going. If you are going to use him, it would be for tournaments. Well, LeBron James. He's at 12,200. He took that last game against Philadelphia pretty personally. He's got a great record against them. You know, 60 points is not an outlandish expectation for LeBron on a four-game slate. Yeah, you have to really like him here. At power forward, Dario Saric is up to 7,100. That's a fairly strong fade for me. While Benny Simmons at 9,500. I think that's too high to consider that in cash, but there is still tournament upside, but I wouldn't want to deal with him in a cash format. I also think Larry Nance is probably too high at 5,800. We love what Nance can do. The fouls are a real issue, so that makes him a tournament guy, not cash, because he could play 12 minutes, he could play 15 minutes, he could play 30 minutes and drop 50 points. That is the conundrum that is Larry Nance Jr. Well, Tristan Thompson's at 4,500. Yeah, very little upside, I believe, for Tomo. But the man with the big upside is, of course, Joel Embiid. 10,500 for Joel. Not an issue. I would, if I'm spending up, I'd probably take LeBron. And Karl Anthony Towns is another expensive center that I can go for. But Embiid is totally fine if you're looking to spend big bucks on a center. On DraftKings, LeBron, Embiid, and Simmons are all valuable for both formats. Yeah, Simmons at a more reasonable 8,600. I can get behind that over on DraftKings. Well, Bob Covert, 47. That price has dropped low enough where I do think it's worthwhile throwing him into a tournament. And Kyle Korver, really cheap at 3,600. And he's seen his minutes boost. And if Jeff Green is out, a few more minutes should go Kyle Korver's way. You're giving him the opportunity to get you 30 points, perhaps, as an upside option in a tournament. The Brooklyn Nets and the Sacramento Kings. Everyone's going to be glued to their seats for this one. I don't know what the Kings are going to do. Will Garrett Temple play? Will Kostas Koufos play? Will Zach Randolph play? Will Vince Carter play? Who bloody knows? Scalabissier is listed as probable with his sprained ankle. So, of course, if Zach Randolph will play, he goes to the bench because you've got to make sure you limit the minutes of your young big man, of course. That is always a priority. For the Nets, I don't know what their starting lineup's going to be at this point. Will Rondae Hollis-Jefferson rejoin it? Who will miss out? Crabbe, Carroll, or D'Angelo Russell? Or will Spencer Dinwiddie go to the bench? How will they manage that rotation? At point guard in this game, 5,800 De'Aaron Fox. Point guards v. Nets, always a good situation. Foxy's coming off a good game, so I do like him for cash and for tournaments. Whereas Dinwiddie's at 7,100. Now, point guards against the Kings is normally a good option as well. But just with D'Angelo Russell there, you know, sharing the ball, his numbers have been a little bit lower. Under 30 average over his last five, Spencer. And at 7,100, if you give me under 30, I'm not really feeling all that good about it. Shooting guards. Budrick Hield, 5,400. A little bit of a disappointment from him in that last game, but I think a bounce back is on the card, so I like him. I like Bogdan at 54, strong cash option with tournament upside, while D'Angelo Russell at 7,500. He dropped 45 in the last game. His numbers have been fine. Yeah, he's got 35 sort of a look about him. More of a tournament guy here just because of that matchup for him, while Caris LeVert, I just don't think the minutes will be high enough. It's a bunch of small forwards in this game, but none that I feel super strongly about. The Blue Swimmer, Damari Carroll, Jumpin' Joe Harris, Justin Jackson, Dante Cunningham. Maybe Damari at 5,900, but there is a minutes risk there. Same with the Blue Swimmer at 52, so I'd probably leave both of them alone. I like Scalabissier at 5,200. Obviously disappointed in that last game, only 13 points, but I think he's a really high 30-35 point upside play in this one. Hollis Jefferson at 6,000, just too uncertain with how the minutes are going to go, so that is a strong fade from me. While Zebo at 6,100, 30-minute Zebo, 40-minute Zebo, 20-minute Zebo, DMP Zebo, no idea. He's all over the place. He's got okay upside, but I don't really think he's worth going for. At center, Cauley Stein's at 7,500. What am I going to say? You know what I'm going to say? Say it with me. Get the megaphones out. Play your centers against the Nets. 7,500 for Cauley Stein. He's coming off a 38-pointer. He's averaging 37 over the last three. This has got 45 upside written all over it. Bang your Willie Cauley Steins and bang them hard. Jarrett Allen's at 5,500. Hey, centers against the Kings, it's almost as good as centers against the Nets. Allen's been playing well. 31 average over the last three. 5,500. That's 2,000 less than Willie Cauley Stein for those of you who have calculators. So Allen is a guy that I think you can use at that price. I'd probably be more cautious with using him because Atkinson can dick around the minutes a bit, but he's been pretty solid lately and Allen's been crushing it. So if you used him in cash, I don't think it's anywhere near the wrong decision. On DraftKings for tournaments, D'Angelo's at 73 and Dinwiddie at 68. The same reasoning as I had on FanDuel. De'Aaron Fox at 5,600. I've got him as a tournament guy. I might even move that to cash. I like it quite a bit. Labissiere at 45 is a good cash option, as is Budrick at 55. And Cauley Stein, of course, centers against the Nets. 7,100. Jarrett Allen at 4,900 is also really, really appealing. Let's go on to the last matchup of the day for Thursday. It's the Minnesota Timberwolves. It's the Portland Trail Blazers. The Blazers are favored by 4.5. The total is 217.5. We know that Jim Butler is out at point guard. Dame Lillard, 9,700. At this point, you can almost play Dame Lillard every single night and expect 40 out of him. He's averaging 49 over his last five. I've got no problem with using him here. The bloke who's seen a big uptick in his usage with Jim Butler out.
My name is Jeff.
Jeff Teague, his price is now up to 7,700, but he's averaging 42 over the last three. Portland's point guards, though, have been really good defensively. They've taken away a lot of the production from opposition point guards. So that is a concern, and it would lead me to go Teague only for GPPs, just based on that matchup. Shabazz Napier also played well, but that was against the Kings. So don't expect that same level of production against the Wolves. At shooting guard, Christian James McCollum at 7,200. I think that's a fade. He has been a little bit disappointing. Jamal Crawford at 44 is only for tournaments, and even then I don't love it. While Andy Wiggins at 6,900 doing pretty much sweet FA. Yeah, he's got some upside, sure. I don't really enjoy playing him, though. At small forward, Nemanja Bjelica is at 5,800, and that's gone up on the back of the fact that he got four steals in the last game, which is almost certainly not going to happen again. So I think that price makes him prohibitive, even though the matchup's quite positive for him. I definitely wouldn't want to be hitching my wagon to Bjelica. Mo Harkless at 4,100. He starts, he plays minutes, he does shit with them, so don't really get excited there. Gorgui Dieng at 3,900. No thanks. The Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He was okay in the last one, so he's right in the middle of good and shit. He's at 4,800. Matchups are negative. Let's go ahead and fade that. Well, Taj at 6,400. I think that's too high for Gibson. Great matchup. I think it's too high, and I would not be keen on that. 5,900, I'd smash it. 64, probably not. At center, Carl Anthony Towns, 10,300. Love this for Townsy. He's playing exceedingly well. You know, really high opportunity for usage to go up again. He dropped 60 in the last game. Big on Townsy here. Well, Nurkic at 7,400. Hate the matchup for him, and he's playing well himself. But at 7,400, I'm not totally on it. But if you want to use him in cash and say, I can get 36 out of him, I don't think that's a crazy statement. The matchup is a real concern, though, because centers against the Wolves have struggled quite a bit lately. On DraftKings, Towns is at 9.6. I love that a lot. While Lillard at 9.4 is also pretty strong, and Teague at 7,200 is also putting into a good spot. And Taj, this is where we like Taj, 5,700. Love it. Totally in on that in cash. I think there's great, great value there for Taj Gibson. All right, let's just wrap this up now. Look at the other couple of sites. On Yahoo for tournaments, D'Angelo Russell, Dwayne Wade, Mo Harkless, and then there's a bunch of cash and tournament guys. I like Tristan Thompson at minimum salary, Jamal Crawford, Jarrett Allen, Budrick Hield, Labissiere, Taj, Cauley Stein, Whiteside, Simmons, Lillard, Embiid, Towns, and James. All those guys are viable options. On Moneyball for tournaments, Simmons and D'Angelo, Isaiah Thomas, Dwayne Wade, Kelly Olynyk, Kyle Korver. And for both formats, Jarrett Allen, Bogdan Bogdanovich, Budrick, De'Aaron, Fox, Brandon Ingram, Iron Shoulder, Cauley Stein, Hassan Whiteside, Lillard, Embiid, Towns, and LeBron. And on Draft Stars for tournaments, Benny Simmons, Spencer Dinwiddie, Yusuf Nurkic, and Justin Jackson. And for both, it's Gorgui Dieng, Kyle Korver, Jamal Crawford, Kelly Olynyk, Labissiere, Fox, Hield, Ingram, KCP, Iron Shoulder, Whiteside, Embiid, Towns, and LeBron James. If you do enjoy this podcast, go and leave a 5-star rating on iTunes and leave a review. Apple Podcasts, sorry. You can also find it on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify and on YouTube, where you can leave a thumbs up. In fact, I highly encourage you to leave a thumbs up. Leave a comment and subscribe over there as well. If you don't know who I am, if you've just tuned in halfway somehow during this podcast, I am Josh Lloyd, the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster. You can find me on Twitter at LockedOn. No, you can't. You can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball. And remember, I do also host the Monday edition of the Locked On NBA podcast. It goes 5 days a week now, so make sure you're checking out Locked On NBA as well. We are done here, guys. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Terry Rozier.